Welcome to Studio Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. The OK Electric Festival returns with a special one-night evening at Duet Jazz Club tonight. The Living Arts of Tulsa-sponsored festival is put together by Tulsa composer and musician Noam Feingold and has traditionally featured emerging new music composers and performers. This year, the festival is upping its game and bringing in a performing artist who has already emerged. Cellist Inbal Segev is a member of the prestigious Chamber Music Society of Lincoln Center, a soloist with top orchestras, and a champion of new music, and electroacoustic music in particular. She, along with the eclectic Tulsa composer David Broom, will be featured in the evening, tonight at 8, at Duet. Segev will also premiere a new work by Feingold as well tonight, a piece entitled A Prayer for Those Who Look Away. This has been a busy year for the artistic director-curator of OK Electric. One of his works for orchestra, The Defiant Poet, Elegy in Memory of Yevgeny Yevdoshenko, was just recorded and released by the Janáček Philharmonic Orchestra on Navona Records, part of their ongoing series in showcasing the work of emerging contemporary composers. Noam Feingold joins us today to talk about the new recording as well as OK Electric tonight. I began by asking about tonight's guest artist, Inbal Segev.
We've been really lucky with the artists that have come to OK Electric for the past few years, just really incredible up-and-coming and early-stage composers and performers who are just some of the world's best and who also happen to be doing interesting things that actually make people curious about a piece of music before they've ever heard it, which I think is partly one of the primary missions. But this year, we were lucky enough to be able to get Inbal Segev, who is genuinely a world-class artist. She plays with the Chamber Music Society of Lincoln Center. She solos with the Berlin Philharmonic, the Israel Philharmonic, Pittsburgh Symphony, is in a trio with Glenn Dichterow from the New York Philharmonic, used to be the concertmaster there before the current guy, Frank Wong, and also with the world-class violist Karen Dreyfus. She also happens to commission and play works by young up-and-coming living composers, which in my book just means she has kind of a healthy attitude towards music,
right?
And not just, you know, this like dry music.
So she's happy deconstructing the Bach cello suites as well as playing a new work where the ink's not dry.
That's right. You know, she has an incredible recording of the complete Bach cello suites, but she also has a really popular YouTube channel about how to play the cello, and gives master classes on YouTube and commissions composers like Timo Andries, Missy Mazzoli, just a lot of the composers that you'll hear kind of all over the country, in my opinion, programmed by organizations who are kind of really paying attention and understand their position in contributing to classical music as a living art form and the power that that has.
So the festival's sort of taking a step up from emerging artist to a full-blown international artist.
Yeah. And which is very exciting. The classical music world, as you know, is very small, and you're in it long enough, travel long enough, and you meet interesting people and end up collaborating in really interesting and unexpected ways. And this year's festival actually has a link to last year's festival in a way, because last year we also brought a cellist to do cello and electronics pieces. You might remember Amanda Gookin.
Mm-hmm.
But when we were putting her program together, really cobbling it together from programs that she was already commissioning and touring, also a lot of really similar composers, just a lot of the same roster.
Mm-hmm.
When we were talking about programming last year, I brought up my friend Giddy Razaz, who is a composer who went to Juilliard and is doing really well for herself now. And she had a piece for cello and electronics. And so I asked her if Amanda could play her piece. And Giddy told me that it was actually commissioned by Inbal Segev. And so I had to ask Inbal for permission to program it. And we were supposed to program it last year. It's a very involved and complex work. And Amanda Gookin has multiple programs of pieces by composers that she's commissioned. And this piece is a 20-minute multimedia collaboration. It has a video component. So it's very involved. And so it ended up being, I think, just a little too long for our program last year. But in the meantime, I got to know Inbal Segev. She gave us permission to do the piece, which, as you know, in the music business is actually a really big deal because she had exclusive rights to perform this piece for the first 5 performances. And so by that point, she hadn't played it 5 times yet. And so we got to know each other and talk about things. And Inbal was interested in coming here and playing it herself. And so now, a year later, she's actually going to do that.
And it is kind of an amazing piece because
it is incredible.
It is, it involves electronics, but it also involves recorded music along with this video component, which you'll be able to do it duet?
Yes. We'll have the projection. It can be done without it, but we're going to do it. We got to try this all out last year because we had to do a few video and cello and electronics pieces with Amanda. And so we're kind of continuing this, but just kicking it up a notch a little bit. This is an ambitious work. I think people are pretty interested and open to pieces that are multimedia. I remember the first year I did OK Electric, we had a whole set of live film scores that we did. And so there is already a tradition of bringing in these other disciplines. So I think it's always really cool to be able to do that. And anyone who was at Duet to see Lee Rinaldo's original composition that he did with his partner, there's something forming in the air. Just this is a whole thing that happens everywhere, and we need to be able to do that in Tulsa just as well as anywhere else.
We're going to hear a little bit of The Legend of Psy, a little excerpt in a moment. But before we hear that, from your own viewpoint as a composer, what is special about this particular piece?
Giddy's actually kind of trained as a very traditional composer.
Mm-hmm.
If I recall correctly, she studied with Samuel Adler and John Corleano. She has a very sort of melodic impulse with a kind of a Middle Eastern tinge to it. And so when I started doing this festival 5 years ago, it was already common for pretty traditional composers to be engaging with electronics. I think I even said on this show, everyone now has their electroacoustic piece for name and instrument plus electronics. But Giddy's happens to be this large scale epic work about the Legend of Psy, which I believe comes from a folk tale.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's a sort of modern reimagining of this folk tale. And she does a lot of really cool things that you'll hear in Steve Reich. For example, where the performer records themselves and mixes it into the pre-written electronics as a form of electronic composition. And so you'll hear Inbal Segev play soloistic lines to pre-recorded tracks that she made that kind of gives it this multi-dimensional feeling on the one hand. And on the other hand, it also just feels like a very natural continuation in a very electronic age.
Of course, that's what's happening with electronics now. You can do bit streams and things like that, and you know, repeated phrases that you repeat on top of yourself.
Right.
That sort of creates this very much an organic sort of sound.
And the really important aspect of this is that world-class performers are starting to take on these projects and are thirsty for new and interesting and exciting projects. And it just cannot be overstated how important it is to cultivate that part of classical music culture, especially with organizations all over the country, all over the world, worrying about financial solvency and hoping that if they just push Beethoven at people hard enough, that maybe somehow through some form of magic, new audiences will come. And, you know, I'm as big a fan of Beethoven as anyone. I think he's probably my number one composer. But I also realize that if you're going to build community, you have to put people on stage who look like the people you want to attract, which is not an original idea. It's just something we understand now. And if you want the art form to survive, you have to give opportunities to young people with new ideas.
Well, let's hear a little bit of this Legend of Psy by Giddy Rezaz, performed by Inbal Segev, who will be the guest for the fifth year of the OK Electric Festival tonight at Duet Jazz Club. Here's music by Giddy Rezaz.
Thank you.
That's music by cellist Inbal Segev, who will be featured at OK Electric Festival tonight at Duet Jazz Club from one of the pieces she'll be performing, Giti Rezaz's Legend Asai. Also something she'll be performing is a world premiere by our guest today, who is the artistic director and curator of OK Electric, Noam Fingal. You have a piece too.
I do, yes.
And it's titled A Prayer for Those Who Look Away. What was the inspiration for this piece?
Well, interestingly enough, the first commission I ever got was a piece for the Slichot service, which is a big part of Yom Kippur. It's a religious service where you really focus on apologies and
atonement
and get the atonement process started.
Mm-hmm.
And it was commissioned by Michelle Cowan and Jeff Cowan at the time, back when I was a student at the University of Tulsa, actually. And so I don't tend to think of myself as a composer who writes religious works. I write whatever I think is interesting that people ask. But I'm coming back to that idea. I think that atonement may be on a lot of people's minds these days. And so I'm just thinking ahead to the Yom Kippur service that comes up next. And I've just been thinking about this idea. It feels like regardless of whatever direction anyone wants this country to go in, I feel like something that is very consistent is that a lot of us are sort of looking the other way when things that we wouldn't normally be okay with are happening, thinking that maybe if we do that, things will just kind of be absolved in the long run and everything will wash out fine.
So it's really a prayer for the disengaged in a way.
Well, specifically, I think anyone who, say, over the last year or so, right, because we tend to think about this religious service in a year-long way, but any time that we feel like maybe we watched someone punch down or we saw somebody picking on someone or a group of people and we thought, well, I guess I have to tolerate this in order to get other big things that I want to happen. And so I can't help but wonder whether a lot of us are actually carrying that around. And I wanted to write a piece that created a space to really think about that, because the deeper you dive into classical music, or really any genre at all, the more you realize that every piece is practical, right? Sometimes that makes people uncomfortable and they push back with, you know, stay in your lane or just focus on music or, you know, be entertaining, or even things like music is supposed to be beautiful or music is supposed to be functional, you know, for sporting events, weddings, even film scores, you know, music taking a supporting role. I think that we need to remember that the most influential pieces of music were ones that were pretty unabashed in their exploration of an idea or reaction to an event. Those are the ones that endure. Those are the ones that bring us back. Those are the ones that communicate across generations, decades, centuries, communities, cultures, all that sort of thing. That is something that always will endure. And so there is something very old about this problem of if I just keep my blinders on and keep doing what I'm doing and don't speak up, either because people are afraid of retribution in some fashion or they'll be brought into it, right? If you just think about what bullying is like in an elementary school,
right?
Sometimes, maybe too often, we watch someone get bullied and we're afraid to speak up because we don't want to get drawn into the line of sight of that person or whatever. Maybe they just think, I'm friends with this person, and to keep being friends with this person and to get those benefits, I'm going to have to keep my mouth shut. So this is really a piece for anyone who may be uneasy or uncomfortable in these times, and maybe people who've only thought about it for a split second, and I want them to think about it for 2 seconds. I feel like that's the job of art, is to, you know, just create a space for reflection and meditation.
So it features cello, but what are the electronics that you use for this particular piece?
Well, I don't want to reveal too much about that. People will just have to come and hear it. But it uses some pre-recorded audio from across the centuries, really. Some of it is people speaking. Others have a more symbolic value. For example, I did something that I rarely do, which is to quote another piece. But in an electroacoustic setting, it's called sampling, right? And that's actually a very common thing. And so there is a sample, for example, of the Remember Me from Dido and Aeneas, which I think is fitting. I also wrote a couple of songs for a congregation, B'nai Amuna's 100th anniversary in 2016. And I sample myself singing texts that are actually located on the walls of the synagogue because it felt appropriate to this. Anyone who knows the Kol Nidre for cello and orchestra, I think, might be kind of familiar with the sound world and the spirit of this piece. I'm just trying to sort of contribute my own piece for Kol Nidre or Slichot.
All right. There will also be another group of musicians, another amazing musician who resides here in Tulsa, who does most of his work in New York, David Broom, along with Annie Ellicott, Nathan Pape, and Kirsten Moser, who will be doing their own set of electronic acoustic music.
That's right. Dave is one of the soft musical giants in Tulsa culture, in Tulsa artistic culture. But anyone who's ever seen him play or heard his music has probably had a pretty good time. He has performed some of his pieces at Philbrook on the organ there. He performs at Duet regularly. And also we co-direct the new music committee at Living Arts, so we work very closely there. He's now the composition guy at Barthelmess at the Bart Center for Music, which I had done for a couple of years, and we were working together. And now he's overseeing that program, which is really amazing. Great teacher, amazing pianist, just really incredible pianist. Plays keyboards for the Danny Elfman Orchestral Tour and also has a really interesting multimedia ensemble that he plays with that tours all over the world. They were in Norway, I think it was last year, doing an opera that featured construction cranes as the main characters for this festival that they were doing. So that kind of gives you a really interesting entryway into the way that he sees things. But he's also a very funny person, and his music is experimental, but it's also extremely hilarious. And so he'll be playing a number of pieces that he co-wrote with a lot of the performers that are on his set. And one of them is with Kirsten Moser, who is a Tulsa-based violinist and composer also, who also writes beautiful music. We commissioned a piece from her on last year's OK Electric that we did. So their piece is called On Brand, A Spiritual Quest, and it's about engaging with social media. And so there's some commentary there.
Yeah, and it has a very electronic feel.
It does.
That's music by David Broom, who will be the opening part of the OK Electric Festival tonight at Duet Jazz Club, along with Annie Ellicott, and Nathan Pape, and Kirsten Moser. My guest is the artistic director, curator, Noam Feingold, who will have a piece premiered by the principal musician of the evening, which will be the Chamber Music Society of Lincoln Center's cellist, Inbal Segev. And this has been a great year for you. I mean, you're doing a lot of different things, and you have a new recording that's coming out on Navona Records, which really specializes in contemporary music, on their compilation album Prisma 3. And this is a piece that you premiered here in Tulsa just a couple of years ago, The Defiant Poet. Tell us a little about this piece.
That's right. This is my elegy to Yevgeny Yevtushenko, which is just the second half of that title. I think many of your listeners are familiar with Yevtushenko's work. But for those who aren't, he's a poet who collaborated with 20th century composer Dmitri Shostakovich. But as a poet, was very outspoken in using his art specifically as a tool for standing up for the oppressed. His poem Babi Yar is credited with reducing anti-Semitism in Russia during the Soviet Union. You know, so this is one work of art that you can put in a long list of works that have had a definite quantifiable effect in making society a better place. And he also happened to reside in Tulsa for 25 years until he passed away in 2017 and was on the faculty of the University of Tulsa. And when he passed, a lot of the things that he had said in his poems and that he went out of his way to stand up for people in saying, I was really worried that that would kind of get lost in the wash also. So I felt like something that I could contribute as a composer was to create what I call a monument in sound to his contributions. So the more you know about him, I think the more there is to hear in terms of musical symbols in the piece. But it's basically just a giant, well, monument is actually a good word because, right, in Babi Yar, he talks about how there was no monument to the Jews who died there. Anyone who knows that incident, Babi Yar is a ravine in Ukraine where during World War II, 100,000 people were essentially murdered, and it was a giant mass grave. Well, 90% of the people murdered were Jewish. And anti-Semitism was so strong in Russia that when asked why there was no monument to the Jews who died there, the government response was because people other than Jews also died, which really just opens up more questions, in my opinion.
Right.
But, you know, that's not the last time that we've heard an excuse like that. And so when you have such a contemporary problem, like not recognizing a definite problem that exists and using language from dissociated cultural contexts several decades ago, and you hear the exact same thing being said in various contexts around you in real time, I think that it's really important to take that moment and realize that when history rhymes, that there is some important data being generated by whoever you want to think about. And so I wrote this piece celebrating his contributions to classical music. We wouldn't have Shostakovich Symphony No. 13 or the execution of Stepan Razin without him. And who knows how many pieces were influenced by those pieces.
Right.
Anyone who loves Shostakovich, I think, knows that. And a lot of people went to that performance in 2005 when Signature Symphony and the Tulsa Oratorio Chorus did it at the PAC. I mean, that was, and Yevtushenko was there reading his poetry with some of his students. I mean, that was a monumental historical moment for Tulsa. And it just makes you want to shake people because it feels like that's not something that we are trained to recognize, which is not the same thing as saying that it isn't happening. And so I just feel like there are so many reasons to try to cultivate this level of awareness of when history is choosing you to participate in it, which happens all the time. But we're so caught up in the things that we do that we don't recognize it. When Yevtushenko passed away here, to me, that was a historical moment telling us that we were in it. Forever, from now on, anyone who ever Wikipedias Yevgeny Yevtushenko, maybe they saw a line from Baba Yar at the Holocaust Museum in Washington, D.C., that Wikipedia article is going to tell them that his final home was Tulsa, Oklahoma. And that is a form of ambassadorship for our community that we can either embrace and engage with or let other people define us by the way that we forget important people. So I felt like it was extremely important to write this piece.
So you just offered it to the Signature Symphony for their first concert of the year then 2 years ago, yeah?
I did. And, you know, it helps that now outgoing music director Andres Franco, already someone who was recognizing the importance of Yevtushenko as a member of our community, was already planning a concert celebrating his contributions to music and to culture and to history and to morality. and so that was already going to happen. And then Mr. Yevtushenko passed. And then by default, it became a memorial concert. And within that week, I started writing that piece because I was, I don't know, I grew up here. I felt like I had a sense for people sort of forgetting. And so I felt like if I wrote a piece, then I would at least be able to contribute extended conversation about it. After a couple of performances, because then the University of Tulsa under Rick Wagner performed it twice after that, there was a Yevtushenko Memorial Concert here as well, a year after the premiere. And Mr. Wagner also performed it at the OMEA Music Educators Convention when the TU Orchestra was chosen as a showcase ensemble. So it's gotten a few performances. And then I saw that Navona Records was doing a call for scores for orchestral pieces. And I thought that the obvious logical next step is that this thing has to exist in a concrete form. Because, you know, the ideal situation is, well, any time that a Shostakovich piece gets played, this is now a great opener, right? especially Symphony No. 13. But honestly, any of them, it's in the spirit of it. So you know, I was thinking a little bit pragmatically in terms of classical music culture, because we always need that new music work at the beginning of a program that pairs so well with just about anything Russian from the 20th century, honestly. But even more important than that was to get this piece recorded. And now it exists on Spotify, Apple Music, the Naxos New Music Library, or Music Library, I should say. So anyone who's on Naxos and can go from listening to Inbal Segev's cello suite, Bach cello suites, to this just by searching for it.
So it was recorded in the Czech Republic, the Janáček Philharmonic Orchestra. You got to participate across the ocean via Skype. Were you happy with the results?
I am. They did a really great job. And I think a part of the reason is I certainly didn't necessarily think about this at the beginning of the project, but it was recorded in Ostrava. And that's at one point or another, was a Soviet satellite. Everyone there has read Yevtushenko. And so when they saw this piece, I mean, from what I was being told at the recording session, you know, they were familiar with his work. And I think that the performers in that orchestra, I think that they felt that weight that I was talking about. I'm not extrapolating. This is based on a conversation I was having through Skype with the engineer about how many members of the orchestra had known Yevtushenko's work and his importance in Soviet society and Russian culture. I mean, the guy was given a state funeral when he died. You can see it on YouTube. Mm. It's kind of a mind-blowing thing. And so, you know, this is a whole category of pieces that this fits into, of works that recognize a historical moment and try to chisel something out of it so that it can be better remembered and understood and felt for all time.
We're going to leave people with an excerpt from the recording and hope a lot of people come out to duet tonight for OK Electric. Noam, thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you so much, Rich.
The artistic director, curator of the OK Electric Festival, Noam Feingold, speaking with us here on Studio Tulsa. OK Electric takes place tonight at 8 o'clock at Duet Jazz Club, featuring Chamber Music Society of Lincoln Center cellist Inbal Segev. Studio Tulsa is produced and edited by Scott Gregory. Here's more music from The Defiant Poet. I'm Rich Fisher.